Okay, we're going to start this. Are you ready, everybody?
Go ahead.
All right. Are you guys cool with doing a countdown?
Who's stopping
him? Because I always like doing a countdown. So, okay, let's just do a 5-second countdown. So we'll do five.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
No, don't do that. We'll do 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We'll all do it together. It'll sound good, all
okay.
right? So start with 5. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There we go.
Sneaky. That
all right, welcome.
Dragon.
No, no.
Starting.
That, no.
No.
That really did sound like Sleepy Dragon. Like, I liked it was the most unenthusiastic countdown I've ever heard. Just like 5, 4, whatever. We got to. Anyway, let's just start this off.
He set the pace. I blame Ian.
That's true. Hi, everybody. My name's Ian, and this is Sneaky Dragon. How many people here listen to the podcast? Have heard the podcast in the past? Clap if you have. Good.
Oh.
How many people were just looking for a place to sit down, get out of the rain? Clap if that's you. All right, that's fair enough.
There's a lot of overlap.
Either way, yeah, there is. Most of our audience is traditionally people trying to get out of the rain.
Yeah.
As I said, I'm Ian Boothby. This is my co-host.
Yep.
And his name is...
Oh, I'm supposed to introduce myself.
That's right. Yeah, episode 130. We haven't gotten this crap down
clapped.
Yet.
Everybody clapped, so I just assumed that you knew I'm David Dedrick, the co-host of Sneaky Dragon and Completely Beatles.
There you go. Okay, fair enough. And joining us on our show here at Fantastic Van Calf in Vancouver. Who loves Vancouver? Look, forget it. Look, I can't do this crap. Normally this stuff works.
What about
in any other audience environment, but for here, I don't know, we don't care.
Where am I?
I don't know, it's the last panel of the day, we're tired, shut up, it's rainy, we're depressed.
What about the rain, am I right? The rain,
yeah.
Vancouver?
We have as our guest today, we've lost you and it's 5 minutes deep. Cartoonist Supreme, we're both big fans of this gentleman. You might know him from his comic, Pounded. You might know him from working on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You might know him as being the original artist on Queen and Country, which is Rachel Maddow's favorite comic, apparently.
It is?
It is Steve Rolston. Please do clap for him, sincerely. He's a guest. Show some respect for the guest.
Hi, I'm Steve.
There you go. This is like this is like when you have a thing at the family and you don't respect mom and dad anymore. But someone came to dinner and let's all be nice to him.
That's
we
right.
got to do that at least.
That's what it's. You're Billy Preston to our Beatles. Oh, I'm still completely Beatling. Sorry, everyone. We just did the Let It Be one, and I'm still on that. Sorry.
That's right. What you're talking about is we also do a Beatles podcast.
Yes.
Which you seem to be sort of trying to do an ad for in the middle of this for some reason.
I'm really pumping it.
Yeah.
I don't know why our listenership is way bigger.
Yeah, I don't know why you're trying to do an ad for our more popular podcast in the middle of this podcast.
Listen, guys, forget this piece of crap. Listen to Completely Beatles.
Or frankly, anything else. Anyway, back to you, Steve. Hey, what's a better podcast you've been on?
Sneaky Dragon, as of whenever this goes online.
Oh, sure. Okay, we'll go with that completely. Now, Steve, you are a cartoonist. When did you start doing this cartoon thing? What spiked your interest in the comic arts?
My interest. Well, I mean, I've always been drawing since I could hold a crayon. You know, mm-hmm. I was lucky people who had their parents sold. My parents sold paper and pens at their office supply store. I was smart to get into drawing. always been drawing. When I was a teenager is when I really discovered that you could tell awesome stories with comic books. Mm-hmm. So that's when I kind of fell in love.
What were the comics that you fell in love with?
Well, I mean, earlier on, I'd read like Archie, Alf comics,
woohoo,
Madballs, but it was
Madballs.
Madballs. Those comics were great. Man.
I do remember the Madballs. Yeah. Sorry, again, we do tend to tangent here. Now, the Alf stories, were they taking place in present day, or were they his previous life on Melmac?
They were mostly on Melmac. There were some stories that took place, you know, here on Earth,
with Willy.
But there's a lot of flashbacks.
Okay, good. Yeah, because that's more interesting. All right. Yeah. So you were inspired by Madballs and Elf.
Yeah, so that's okay. Sparked it for a while, but like most people, you know, in their, you know, at 10 years old, they go on to higher pursuits in the comics. But then I got dragged back when I was about 13 years old. I think it was actually like some Spider-Man comics I just like was given. And I was like, wow.
So what higher pursuits were you pursuing as a 10-year-old? That would be the question, I think. If there's a 3-year gap there where you went to university.
I've really no clue. I'm just bullshitting, man. Oh, that's what I was told the panel was about.
Sorry about that, everyone. I took it to a bad place.
No. And at the 10-minute mark, you turned on us. We lost the audience at 5. We lost the guest at 10. Oh, we got 30 minutes left. Let's see where this goes. We got a real Apocalypse Now thing happening. We're going down the river.
If you really want to know, I was focusing on homework, man. I like math, all right? Get off my back.
No, that's all right. It's fine. Yeah, it's funny. We're the opposite of what parents would be. We're like, you know, no, get back to comics. What's this math nonsense?
Let's go back on homework.
But like, so first, I really actually want to know what you can do a Madballs comic about, but forget about that.
A lot of origin stories.
A lot of origins.
Of how they mutated.
Oh, wait. So, okay. All right. I do have to follow up on this. I apologize. Those of you that don't remember what Madballs were, they were a ball that looked crazy that kids would play with and collect, correct?
Yes. Made of plastic.
Made of plastic. And they looked disturbing.
What could you do with them?
Well, they were kind of like
you couldn't roll them, right? Because they had like a full face on them. So if you tried to like roll it, it would just roll.
Right.
You couldn't bowl with a Madball.
You whip them at your friends.
Basically, that is what you do.
You couldn't go mad bowling.
No, you couldn't do
that.
So they would just do origin stories of each of these horrific balls. They were like regular balls, and then something happened to them.
Right. I think it was like the main characters were just rubber balls that fell off the back of a rubber ball delivery truck and bounced down the hill into like some toxic swamp that was the outflow from some toxic chemical factory, whatever, and then they mutated. You know, very Ninja Turtles.
Very Ninja Turtles. Yes. I'm going. Yes. This is the Ninja Turtles origin story.
But then,
to be fair, Ninja Turtles was a ripoff of the Daredevil origin story.
And to be fair, the turtles have balls, so they have mad balls as well. We just don't see them because who'd want to see that? It's gross.
Maybe that mad balls were a spinoff of the turtles that they never said.
They never told us.
Yeah.
Oh, their balls are mad.
Of course, they were also the enemies.
Are they hosts on Fox News now, the Madballs? Do they do like a rant? You know what's eating me up? I'm so mad. He has this mad face.
That's right.
And then someone rolls him off.
And they go, I don't roll very well.
Clunk, clunk, clunk.
But back to our guest. What?
Well, you were curious about the different types of balls.
Yeah, I was. Like, so you say some balls turn to evil.
Let's keep talking about balls.
Good.
Well, I honestly, I have not read these in over a decade, or if not more. But I do remember that
they're not reprinted, and ne'er will be.
We're all friends here, Steve. You can be honest.
But I do recall that some of the villain balls, the enemies of the Mad Balls, I don't know what they're called.
Bad balls, clearly.
There's a baseball, I think a basketball. I know there was a football, and he was like, that seemed odd because they're all round except for the football weirdo. So I assume, I think they actually had a...
He was a sad ball.
So it was like, for them, I think it was like some evil villain who didn't like the Mad Balls, got some of his own balls, dipped them in toxic whatever, as you are prone to do with your balls, and to create his own, you know,
we've all dipped balls, right, people?
Mad, crazy balls.
Come on, let's
be
honest.
If you ordered the Mad Balls, you could get the ball dipper for free.
Yes.
If you had sent in 5 the coupons, you could do that.
It was like the ball washer at a you know, where the...
Oh, I was trying so hard to keep this clean.
Golf.
Anyway.
No, like
just imagine the lawsuits
that would come from that product. What do they call it,
the
driving range? What is that called? Is it a driving range? Is that what it is, where you go shoot golf balls?
Yeah, that's where...
They have, like, the ball washer.
They do have the ball washer, I know. No one's disputing that they have the ball washer.
They also have those on the golf course as well.
Why are we fighting? Didn't know that. There's no reason to be fighting. I completely agree with you.
But you said I took it down the wrong road. I was like, what? Driving ranges are bad?
We've gone to testicle humor right off the top. Right off the top. We're talking about nice things with the nice
person.
He was
trying to clean it up by washing the balls. Come on.
Okay, so the bad balls fight the mad balls.
I think, yes.
All right, and that's that. And then at the age of 10, you went, I've had enough of this.
Of balls.
Right, then I was like, oh, hey, girls.
Girls were pretty great. Yeah. Remember girls?
Vaguely.
Those were pretty awesome. Whatever happened to those?
Well, I got a good one who reads comics.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, me too. I actually lucked out on that one.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. I got one that does comics. So there you are. But it's not a contest. But if it is, clearly I won. Anyone who is keeping score.
Well, mine's better in a knife fight, all right?
I would not disagree with that. Or in the robot apocalypse, I think yours would probably do quite well.
I got a wife who puts up with me. I think I win.
That is a superpower.
Yeah, for sure.
If we're listing mutant abilities,
that's
not bad. You started to read the superhero stuff, the Batman and your Spider-Man.
Yeah, well, it was a Spider-Man issue that really sort of sparked that interest again when it was like grade 7 or whatever it was. And it wasn't even necessarily a good story. or even good artwork, but it was just, I could see the potential of turning my drawings into something bigger and being able to tell a story that other people would read, other people would enjoy, and I could get something across in my drawings that you wouldn't do with just one-off drawings. Mm-hmm. Of course, one of the things was, like, it was that era where there's like 5 or 6 Spider-Man titles, and you had to read all of them to know what was going on.
Amazing,
and
I
was like,
Spectacular, Web, yeah. Marvel Team-Up, and the other. The one.
Yeah. So I think I was the amazing one. I picked up one of those, but it was like, okay, you know, continue the story in the Web of Spider-Man. It's like, no, I won't.
He wrote that in the comic. No, sir, I will not.
But I was
lying to you, Maple.
I was lucky enough that was this, around the same time that Image Comics started.
Okay.
So there are all these new titles starting at issue number one. So yeah, that was, I think that was really what clinched me, is I could start from new with these new stories, you know, Spawn number one, The Max number one, Gen 13 number one, and I could get the whole story. So it was a nice starter point for me.
Yeah, that's actually a thing that I
and
don't think...
A year later, you had 5 Image Comics.
Because they didn't put
they didn't
out
come
one.
Yet,
that's a,
they didn't put out.
That's good,
that's
commentary on
to.
The early 90s. Good, yep. Good for you.
Thank you.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, I think that is something about Image Comics that did appeal to young people, was you could start from scratch. Like, if you picked up Amazing Spider-Man, when I picked up my first Spider-Man, it was like in the issue hundreds, and I can't follow all this. Who's this character, and what's this? And clearly, there's so much backstory, I'd never ever be able to follow it. But Spawn number one, boom, okay, I get it, I'm in.
It doesn't have all that baggage, you can jump right in.
Yeah.
And then, actually, the interesting thing is, Spawn was actually, it turned me on to independent comics, because I think it was like issue 6 or 7 or something like that, Cerebus showed up.
Yeah, that's true.
Which made no sense whatsoever. But Cerebus, for those who don't know, is the Dave Sim comic about the aardvark warrior adventurer.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, this is weird. This is kind of cool. And there was an ad in the back where you could order the Cerebus comics. So I did that, you know, it's like, got my mom's credit card or whatever, and, you know, faxed off the mail order thing, and they emailed it out, or mailed it out to me, and got the first phone book, and it was like, it was a black and white comic, but it was a big phone book size volume, and the stories were great. It was excellent, especially the early Cerebus stuff was actually really awesome.
Probably would have been High Society.
Well, the first one was just, I think it was just called Cerebus, and I think the second one was High Society.
Yeah, the first one was kind of Barry Windsor Smith parody. Yeah.
The first collection was High Society. Oh,
it was? Okay,
yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Really?
The very first collection was High Society.
Okay,
yeah.
But they did collect the earlier
issues.
They
did after, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And you say it was the...
I guess it was High Society then is what I got.
All right.
The first phone
book.
Was
he walking up the steps with the bag on his back?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, that's High Society.
Okay.
All right.
I stand...
What can I say?
I sit corrected. Okay.
The one thing I know about...
Yeah, so that then led me on to being open to other, you know, independent comics, black and white comics, and then, you know, eventually discovered there's a comic book store in the town like half an hour away. So, you know, it just sort of opened up my horizons even more so.
That is a special time when you find that. Like, Cerebus at that time was doing a lot of traveling around. Like, he appeared with, I think, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as well.
Who
like,
hasn't?
Yeah, that's true. Those guys did get around. Let's be honest.
They're called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Slurtles.
Okay, I'm pausing for laugh and
pausing for silence.
Only for my laugh. That's all right.
That's fine. Yeah, they like would hang out with Usagi Yojimbo, and they'd hang out with a Cerebus.
Yeah.
Those guys. Yeah, you know. In fact,
everywhere.
To the point where eventually you ended up drawing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. For all our talking about their testicles and slamming them, you have actually
you have seen their testicles.
Been part of that world. You
I did a one issue one shot in Tales of the TMNT. Issue number 28, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and that was cool. Obviously, I grew up with the cartoon. I missed out the era of actually reading the old black and white comics.
Mm-hmm.
So like, all I got was like their sludgy adventures in Riverdale with Archie and the gang. but still,
they
I
would hang out with everybody. Those turtles.
But I still grew up with them.
They were
so
the
it was
Lindsay
very cool.
Lohan of the comic scene back then. You'd see them at every party doing. It's like, guys, you're famous. Relax.
Yeah.
Just relax. Well, they're still working to this day. So who am I to judge?
They are. And I got to draw a story where Raphael got drunk in a bar with a rival ninja and then got kidnapped by alien robots and had to fight Larry Free. So that was fun.
Okay. Let me just ask you about that. So Raphael is drinking in a bar. Now, thing one,
he is
a turtle.
Yep.
Yeah.
One, I don't think turtles can drink alcohol, but then that's fine. He's a mutant.
Can they be ninjas?
I don't know. Okay, all right. Yeah, no, they. That's a good point as well. I don't know what the rules of ninjas are.
Do it because you can't tell that they're drinking at a bar. You don't know.
By the way, why are they so colorfully dressed if they're ninjas? Like, they're all primary colors and bright colors. Isn't ninjas that you got to, like, be looking, you know, like...
Storytelling.
It's storytelling.
So you can tell them apart.
Okay, that's fair.
I thought they'd set personal challenges. Like, it's you can anyone can do it with black clothing, but can you do it wearing a purple thing across your eyes? What is it called if you have a thing over, around your eyes?
Actually, it's called a mask.
A mask. Thanks. If you have a purple mask around your eyes and a purple belt, can you...
When you finally have your stroke, it's going to be so hard to tell.
You'll know because I'll be making toast.
That's right. Oh, now that I'm thinking about it, the original Turtles did not have the different colors.
Yeah, they were all red, right?
They were all red, that's right. And they...
It was the cartoon that ruined it all.
That's right. And gave them the... Did they enjoy pizza in the original hardcore comics?
I don't know.
Yeah, that might have been...
Does anyone in the audience know?
I read
is there
one.
Anyone awake in the audience?
Now, this is a good room to come and take a nap. But let's go a little bit farther back. So what was your first professional job in the comics industry?
Well, the first thing where I got paid to actually do a comic book in print would have been Queen and Country, which
wow,
was a pretty
a
cool
start.
Way to start.
Holy cow.
I had done my own Jack Spade and Tony Two Fist, which was a webcomic slash mini comic that I did before that, which probably no one ever saw. But yeah, Queen and Country was the first real job because I'd sort of been... I was a big fan of Oni Press at the time, so I'd bug them at conventions, bug them on their message boards. Eventually, they're like, all right, this guy kind of draws all right. He's not too crazy. That's one of the good things about going to conventions and meeting the other creators and editors is that they can filter out the really crazy people from the slightly crazy people, which is the group that I fell into, and actually offer them possible work.
Yeah, you got to be a little crazy to be in the industry, but they look in your eyes and see if you got that glazed look, that dangerous...
So every comic company has... You don't have to be crazy to work here, but it helps. Poster on their wall.
Yeah.
Every single one.
Every one of them has that poster from 1972.
That's just hang in there,
baby. Yeah, they have the cat one as well.
It's classic.
Classic references. That's fair. Now, those are you here in the audience? Who's familiar with the comic Queen and Country? Clap if you are in any way aware of it. Not many of you. All right, let me fill you in, and also you, gentle listener. This is a comic that's written by Greg Rucka, who's considered one of the best writers, basically, out there.
Yes.
And this was this is a comic that came out to great, great acclaim. It's a very exciting story. If you were to sum it up, issues you worked on, generally?
I mean, the overall series is about Tara Chase, who's she's a British spy. So it's an espionage comic. I call it espionage comic rather than spy comic, because spy kind of makes you think James Bond. Whereas Queen of Country is a lot more gritty and realistic.
She only says her name once. I said she only says her name once, so she's in no way like James Bond.
As opposed to James Bond, 1962 reference.
Okay,
yep, go ahead.
Going back.
It's a nice, very gritty espionage comic, very, very well written. So I was
well drawn, let me say.
And well drawn by everyone, because the artist actually has changed every story arc. I think it ran for about 36 issues or something like that. So I drew the first four issues, that first story arc, we actually won the Eisner Award for Best New Series, which is pretty cool, especially when it was my first job.
Yeah.
So then that was all great acclaim, and it's all downhill from there.
That's right. It's like being on your first hockey team and winning the Stanley Cup, and you're like, well, I guess this is what it's going to be like the rest of my career.
I can attain it. Once you've won that Eisner Award, it's all, it's fine.
That was my last Eisner Award.
Get back to work, jerk. Yeah, that's pretty much the way it goes. That's fair. But it's a really highly acclaimed book and well worth your read. So you got the Eisner Award. Now, who's knocking on that door? It's everybody, right? They're all... Hey.
No. Yeah, Eisners are good for acclaim and boosting your ego and getting you a little bit of exposure, but it doesn't mean people are throwing money at you or your job offers.
No, and you get free pizza that night, whether you win or not. They have a little pizza bar, all-you-can-eat pizza bar off to the side.
It's full of Mutant Ninja Turtles. All eating pizza, a bunch of guys.
They do enjoy pizza. That's a good,
true.
That's a good call.
It's the only thing I know about them.
That's right.
Pizza. Pizza!
The food at the Eisners is a little weird. It is a weird little buffet that you're like, I don't know if I should eat from this or not, but
I don't think I ate there. I do remember getting a little chocolate square.
Oh, yes, they did give you the little chocolate.
That was nice.
One chocolate as well. Yeah.
On a pillow? Did they just bring a pillow up with a chocolate on
it?
Yeah, that's nice.
It's delicate. It's from your hotel.
Yeah, it's from your hotel pillow. They bring it over from the hotel. Give you the mint.
The Eisners are nice otherwise. They're very, very nice otherwise. But yeah, the buffet is a very weird little side thing. I know most people don't actually know there's a buffet. I didn't know there was a buffet till my second time there. And then I wasn't nominated like that second time. I was there with someone who was. And they mentioned, oh, there's a buffet. And I went, can we eat there? I guess. And then we went over, and once I started eating, other people ran, there's a buffet? Yeah.
What?
Okay. And we all started having the weird pizza. just something for you to know right. next time well, you're nominated.
Were you just okay. given like pizza. Were you given a cooked pizza crust and you put your own toppings on it and some cheese and that was it?
Yeah. Then you put it through. They got a pizza like oven there. You do it yourself.
Is it called a salamander? The thing that they put the cheese in to melt in a restaurant?
You could. Yeah, that would work for a pizza.
That's my culinary knowledge.
Yeah, you can also like do your own comic and put it in there and it seals it up and gives a nice glossy coat to it. And then you have your comic
you
as well.
You also put that through as well.
Yeah, that's
okay.
how it goes.
That's it's nice.
A comics industry award.
Wow.
Anyway, all right, and we're back.
Oh, we're done pizza
yeah,
now.
No, okay, we're done. Right. Yeah, we're done on the Eisner Awards. I'm sure the Academy Awards are very similar. I'm sure they have like a little buffet off to the side.
Oh, yeah.
You can have snacks
sure.
whenever you want.
As you leave.
All right. I don't think you get anything as you leave.
Where the buffet is. As you walk off the stage, you just pick up some food on a plate, and then you carry your award with your plate of food into the green room where you wait.
Oh, that's right. Endless breadsticks.
So the winners eat, and the losers just go home hungry.
I think we all know.
Okay. All right.
I think we all know how much people in Hollywood love to eat.
Yeah, they don't. Unless you're character actors, then you can.
Then you can eat as much
as Patton Oswalt has said.
Yeah.
All right, back to you.
Thanks for stealing his joke.
Back to you. I didn't steal. I credited it. How is it stealing if it's credited?
You quote W.C. Fields,
blah, blah, blah. Oh, way to steal his joke.
You quoted him after, so you got the laugh, then you gave him credit for it.
Coming back this way. By the way, those of you thinking of leaving, we have prizes in about 5 minutes to give away. So don't. Hey, Steve, how's it going?
How's it going? Nice.
All right.
Nice dynamic you guys have there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's kind of...
It's very warm and fuzzy.
We've known each other since high school, and we're kind of on our last year. The point is...
It's that closeness of singing in an afternoon choir that, you know, kept us together all these years.
We did sing in an afternoon choir.
Ah, the harmony. Sweet harmonies.
Yeah. We're looking for an opportunity to sing right now. So you do your Queen and Country, and then what's the next thing that you do that you're like, this feels like me, that you feel really good about?
That's a good question.
I think the
next thing, I'm pretty sure the next comic was Pounded.
Yeah, I was going to say Pounded was pretty fantastic, yeah. That you wrote as well?
No, that was Brian Wood wrote that.
Okay.
Who
was another highly acclaimed writer you might know from DMZ. That's his book for Vertigo.
Yep, Northlanders was a big one. Yep. At that time, we were both sort of starting out in our careers. So he was a fan of Queen and Country. I was a fan of Channel Zero, which he was doing at the time. Mm-hmm. So I think we actually just emailed each other and said, I like your work, I like your work. Hey, let's work on something together sometime. So he sent me his idea for Pounded, which is a punk rock romance revenge story, which originally he was going to set it in Vermont, which is he sort of grew up in the punk scene in Vermont, but he knew I was in Vancouver, so he switched to Vancouver as a bribe to make me draw it, and it worked. So I drew it. It was a 3-issue miniseries through Oni Press. So that was a lot of fun. Got to draw Vancouver stuff, Steam Clock, bunch of pubs that are now shut down. The Starfish Room actually got torn down the same week the comic came out that I drew it in, which I hope was not my fault.
That would be a very fast decision for them.
Yeah, usually they don't make those decisions in an hour.
Or based on comics.
This guy drew it in a comic book. Down! Puts on their hard hats.
Well, there's not a lot of comics that are based in Vancouver. You know, your Scott Pilgrims, and that's taking place in Toronto, and like a nice little story in Toronto. But there's very few actually that are in Vancouver proper, unless it's an issue of like Alpha Flight, where something terrible goes down, and like Sasquatch is involved because he's a teacher at SFU.
Yeah,
Sasquatch is a teacher at SFU.
And then he's always like standing on a hillside with the mountains behind him, very iconic stuff, and it's a little cheesy, but
yeah,
you know how it is.
And you would always have like the Harbour Centre Tower, like right next to BC Place. They shoved everything that was in Vancouver, you know, together. And BC Place is right next to a totem pole. They're just like, just shove it all. The whole city is in this one little space. Yeah. But
the same thing we do to Paris and all those other cities.
Yeah. There's the Arc de Triomphe right next to the Eiffel Tower. Yeah, that was something my wife was told to do once she did an adaptation of a movie, but it was like, there was a movie and they wanted to have her do a scene from it. And they wanted both the Eiffel Tower and the Arc de Triomphe in the same shot while all this other stuff is going on. It's like, you can't do that. Unless it's a Google Maps overhead shot, you know, you just get, they're not that close.
And yet it has been done.
And it got done.
Comics are filled with lies.
Those turtles died. None of them mutated. They all just
It's
died.
Okay, because according to the movies, the Eiffel Tower is no longer standing, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, the Eiffel Tower does get knocked down in very many movies.
Every movie.
We hate that Eiffel Tower.
Didn't you know Eiffel Tower is like Wolverine? It has regenerative properties?
Okay. I did not know that. It's made of adamantium. There you go, everybody. Now
that'd be great in a movie if you see, like, after it gets knocked down, it just starts growing back again. And then all the French people go, we don't know why this happens. We've tried to knock it down over and over. No one in France likes this thing.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just this horror show. I'm going to keep going with our interview, but you were going to say something.
Well, I was going to go off on a Toronto tangent.
Oh, please, Toronto tangent.
Please.
Because you mentioned that the Vancouver doesn't get drawn too much. So actually I almost feel bad because I drew Pound It in Southern Vancouver, and then my next project was One Bad Day, which is a graphic novel, crime story.
Also very good.
I wrote and drew that one myself, and while my instinct was to set it in Vancouver, I'd just done a comic book set in Vancouver, so I was like, I'll just better switch it up, pick another Canadian city. So I was like, I know people in Toronto who can take photo reference for me. So, set in Toronto. Then, a couple years later, I draw Emiko Superstar, which the writer set in Toronto, because it's based, sort of inspired by her life. And then I drew a Degrassi comic, also set in Toronto, because obviously Degrassi's in Toronto. So now I've done 3 graphic novels set in Toronto, and still only one in Vancouver, so...
Sellout.
I'm sorry, Vancouver. I'll get back to you.
He's looking for that CBC money. That's what it really
is. Sweet Degrassi. Oh. Now, was this Degrassi classic, or was Degrassi the new Degrassi? Was this Degrassi with Drake or non-Drake?
It was Drake.
Oh, it was Drake. Did you draw Drake?
At that point, he's in a wheelchair. Sorry, spoilers. But it's years old now. But yeah, it was Degrassi the Next Generation. So it was sort of, the stories took place between seasons. So it was very cool to draw. Jay Torres wrote
all
of them.
Summer? They're all based in the summertime?
Yep. Huh. So, summer jobs, that kind of stuff.
And Jay Torres?
Yeah, Jay Torres was the writer.
Also a really good writer?
Yep, so it was good to work with him.
You only work with good people, apparently.
I do. I'm very picky.
Have you noticed
I haven't worked with you yet? Just kidding.
Hey, man, when we do it, it's okay, because we're friends. But listen,
were in choir with him.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Bloodbath.
All right.
But to be fair to the old school Degrassi, I did draw some cameos of Joey Jeremiah and Spike in the background scenes in Emiko Superstar. Just
nice.
To give them a nod.
Okay, yep. I appreciate that. Thank you. Was that Spike before or after she had her baby?
While carrying the baby. Yeah, it was just still in her belly.
All right, so in Degrassi continuity, that's where that story takes place.
Probably not.
In the Degrassi verse.
Because there were cell phones.
Okay. I'm going to try and give some stuff away now. The con...
I'll take it.
No, you can't, because you're part of this. VanCath has nicely given us some movie passes to give away. Now, these are movie passes to a film called The Grand Seduction, which takes place in the Maritimes. Have you ever drawn the Maritimes?
I feel like I have not yet.
Why
except,
do you
Except
hate...
maybe in a filthy joke comic.
A filthy joke comic about...
I feel like I've probably been derogatory towards the Maritimes in some way in a drawing.
Okay,
but
that's fair.
My girlfriend is from... Halifax, so I can say and do things like that. It's okay.
Sure, that's fine. That's how that works. Okay, so we're going to be giving away these. We got a lot of, we got like 5 admit two passes here. So what we're going to do is, if you have a question...
Does everyone know what that movie is, The Grand Seduction?
Why don't you go ahead?
Well, it's a film about a small village and somewhere in the Maritimes, and they're trying to attract a doctor to the village, because if they do, then they can have industry move there. And so they're trying to make their town look more presentable. So they think the guy likes cricket, so they try and form a cricket team in this small fishing village. And oh, the hilarity that ensues.
Wait, are you being sarcastic about it? We're trying to give these away.
Hilarity ensues.
Oh, the
Did
hilarity
I not say?
Ensues.
It stars Brendan, what's his name? Brendan Blethyn? No, what's that actor's name?
Brendan Graham, the writer?
Brendan Graham, the writer of King City. He stars in it. And Taylor Kitsch, who was in The Martian Chronicles.
Okay. Well done. Okay,
so if you like The Martian Chronicles.
or John Carter.
I can't remember
If you liked any of those
you
films.
You guys know the Irish actor that whenever you see him in a movie, he goes, oh, he's the bad guy. Even if the first scene he walks in the movie, you're like, oh, the bad guy. He's going to betray the hero.
All right, so you're saying that's what happens to this film. That's
saying... I said hilarity ensues.
All right, let me lay down what's going to happen.
It might be a hilarious betrayal. I don't know.
We're trying to plug the movie. They gave us the nice tickets, and we're trying to... This is why we can't have sponsors. This is why.
Listen, you blew our Madball sponsorship that I was working on for years.
Once
I've been working on for the last year.
Yeah, the early 90s Madball sponsorship that I really blew there. You know what? We could probably buy
Madball. I specifically told you guys, no Madballs on this episode.
Okay.
What happened?
Why didn't they call
all him? Mad balls.
Yeah. All right. And this, okay.
It was all balls this episode.
It sure was. You know what? You've got to draw a title card for this, so you're going to be drawing mad balls. So for all that you're talking it up, buddy, this is 5 hours of you on the drawing table researching mad balls. So the karma is coming around. Hi, everybody. I've got some passes to give away. Now, here's what's going to happen. If you ask us a question, we will give you free tickets to this movie.
For two. Passes like, for two.
Passes for two for tomorrow. So if anyone has a question, and now this could be a question for either Steve, could be a question for myself, or you could ask things about the movie that Dave doesn't know, or famous Irish actors that he enjoys.
Yeah.
And
well, he was great in The Guard, right? That's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, he was great, that guy. Yeah, it was fantastic. Okay. So if you raise your hand and you've got a question at any point, yes, sir.
Hello.
Steve, I will repeat what you say because you are not mic'd. Go.
He's pretty loud, though.
What are you working on now?
What are you working on now? What future projects do you have in your works? And I am setting these tickets aside for you, sir. Or you can come up and grab them, please. You're more than welcome.
Well, I'm kind of, I guess, in between projects because I just wrapped up penciling 6 issues of a comic called Public Relations, which First Comics will be putting out at some point in time. So for those who don't know, First Comics was big in the 80s, but they're about to make a
Nexus.
Yeah, E-Man.
Yeah. So that one with the guy with a hat.
Which was, I believe it was all before Madball's era, so I missed out on it.
American Flag.
So they will be making a comeback, and this is one of the series which does not have a launch date yet, but it's being written by Matthew Sturgis and Dave Justice.
Again, these great writers.
And the first arc is being drawn by penciled by David Hahn, who I think his work is excellent. And I drew issues 6 to 11, so that's even further in the future. But yes, it's basically it's a sort of a workplace comedy about a PR firm in a magical kingdom. So there are dragons and castles and paperwork and a lot of crass humor. Very, very filthy comic. So keep that in mind before you buy it for your kids.
Then do buy it for your kids.
Yes. Just keep in mind and still go against your better judgment. So that is the next thing that will be published of mine. I just don't know when. And after that, I'm not quite sure yet. Comic book artists, our lives are in flux.
Cool. All right. Is there any other questions for people who want to win things? Yes, you, sir, in the red. Have you ever had your work retconned, and how does that feel?
I don't think I have, because, I mean, I've mostly worked on more independent comics, so for smaller publishers, they have a lot more respect for creators, among other things. So even changes that I've been asked to do, I've been very minimal, even from the writer wanting me to change camera shots, so there's only a few examples of that, and it always makes sense. So I've never had anything really changed or retconned in any way.
Writing for the Simpsons comic book, I've had things that I've done, then done very similarly by the TV show. And so that would, like, I did the Simpsons Futurama crossover, and they're going to do that on the show this year. So, you know, whatever I did in that will totally be retconned out by the TV show. TV show always takes precedence.
But you can still take credit.
Sure, I'll take some credit.
I was retconned on Sneaky Dragon when they replaced the original host with this jerk. So it was a surprise to me.
Yeah, it used to be that Brendan guy, that actor, but you could never remember his last name, and he finally, I've had enough of this shite.
That's right. So long, Brendan McGuire.
Off I go. All right, we have one more. We've got a couple more of these passes. If anyone wants to ask a question, yes, sir. Has any of our comic book works been made into a movie?
Mine, not yet. They've been trying to make Ghost Project, which is probably most recent publication of mine. It was supposed to be a TV show at Sci-Fi Network, then they changed their mind. Then it was supposed to be a TV show at NBC, then they changed their mind. But it's still currently being shopped around with some good creators attached to it, so I'm still hopeful that might be turned into a TV show, which would be great, because it'll tell people to buy the comics, which is the goal. Also, Queen and Country is actually set to be a movie starring Ellen Page. So that was announced a few months back. So fingers crossed that they'll keep on track and that will happen. And it'll sell comics for us, which is good.
Yeah, it's the Walking Dead dream.
Yes.
Yeah. I did a comic book, a self-published comic book called Swears, which was optioned for a TV series, but it didn't end up happening. But, you know, that's the way things go. You get optioned, and then most times you get optioned, and then nothing goes. Yeah,
it's always a crapshoot. So you gotta, fingers crossed, but don't hold your breath or you'll, you know, suffocate.
That's right. And why do you have his fingers crossed when he suffocated? And so those are yours, if you want. Okay, we have, how many more of these we have? We have three more, so, there, sir, over there. Yes, you, the young man in the glasses. All right, question for me.
You write a lot of the Simpsons comic books, and they obviously like what you do, like that, and you do it over and over again. So is there any crossover between the TV series and what you do? Did they ever mine the comic books and go, you know, that really funny thing, man, let's take that into the show, or let's make an episode based on that? Or
well, all right, so your question is, have you ever taken the comic books and they put that into the TV show? They have not directly lifted from the comic, they have directly lifted from a different thing I did, though. I did a book of posters for them once. Anything that I do for The Simpsons is then property of Fox, and they can use it in whatever way they want to. And so they used a joke that I wrote for a poster in the opening scene for The Simpsons movie, and it was with one of the kids up the flagpole hung by his underpants, and the other kids are saluting. That was something that they borrowed from that. There is a bit more crossover in the Futurama comic because Patrick Verone is one of the writers, or was one of the writers on the TV series, and also used to write the comics quite a bit. So there was a little bit of back and forth there. And also the Futurama writing office was the same office as Bongo Comics offices for a long time. So there's a little more back and forth. But The Simpsons was really its own entity. There's been a bunch of gags that we've done parallel, but no, it's never been anything direct.
They see
it as two totally different things, but the overall supervisor in both cases is Matt Groening, because it's his company, Bongo Comics. So, you know, what we want, I always like saying this, is like, the nice thing about having Matt in charge is the comic actually seems like the show, whereas the example I always like to give is, I used to read Roadrunner comics as a kid, and I used to like the Roadrunner, and Roadrunner comics, he was a single dad with three kids, and they all spoke in rhyme, and lived in a house. And that is Roadrunner Comics, yes. I just bought, like 2 weeks ago, I went like, was I? And I found one, I bought it, and that's what it is. They just speak in rhyme. And then the coyote's yapping a mile a minute. And, yeah, but he's just a domestic dude, a single dad, three kids.
Well, they did that to all the characters, though. Bugs Bunny also, the formerly chaotic character, the sort of agent of chaos and wherever he appeared, suddenly he's like this middle-aged guy with some rabid nephews that he has to look after, and they're the troublemakers.
Yeah.
And he's like the stern father figure. And you're like, what happened to the guy that dressed up like a woman and fooled hunters?
Yeah.
That's not right.
Same thing with Woody Woodpecker with Knothead and Splinter.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that whole Donald Duck, Huey, Dewey, and Louie thing screwed it up for everybody.
It was all screwed.
Yeah. But the rest of those comics, I mean, Bugs did have a nephew in the animated series, and Woody and Splinter and whatever, but the Roadrunner one was just so, you've never seen this show at all, and you did these comics, and those ran for a long time. So one of the things we actually discussed with the comic, I wasn't there at the start of it, but like later on when I was talking to them about it, they went, yeah, we also hated those kind of comics that were not at all like the show. So yeah, we've always tried to make it like the show as much as possible. And there are some tickets for you.
Is that tomorrow night?
That is for tomorrow night.
You got a hockey game.
Oh, well, who's an athlete? That's great. So you don't get to. This is my friend over here, David. Another David. Davids are just trouble. Listen, David,
former friend of the show.
Anyone who comes up for that ticket and wants David's tickets can have it. All right. We got two more sets left. So two more questions available if you want to ask a question. If you don't.
I have a question.
Okay.
This is for Steve.
All right. This is totally unethical that I'm giving you that, but
no,
go ahead.
I don't. You have a really clean line. Do you use brush when you ink?
Not anymore. I used to use a combination of brush for characters and also pens for background details and stuff like that. But so there's like Pounded, Queen Country, there's all sort of the combination.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually I realized I was being stupid because I really like that nice clean line, that nice crisp, sort of very technical, precise line.
Yeah.
And I was really fighting against the natural properties of the brush.
Okay.
So eventually I just switched to completely like Pigma Micron type pens for all of it. And it was just really choosing the right weapon, and that the pens are the right weapon for the style I want for my work.
But you have thin, thick lines, so do you draw outlines and then ink them in, or?
Like the thick outer lines?
Yeah.
Oh, use a thicker brush. Sometimes I'll double up with like a thicker brush, or a thicker pen.
Okay.
But I also use there's a Faber-Castell pit brush tip
pen. Sure, okay.
So it's a pen, but it's got brush like tip, so you get some nice pretty fat lines, so I like using that as well.
Okay. Okay. That was just for me. I'm just curious. Sorry, guys. A little nerd about the brushes and the... I use brushes.
I still miss the act of using a brush and the ink just sort of flowing over the page. It's a very sort of zen craft, and it takes a while to learn.
Yeah.
So once you get over that initial hump, of learning to control the line with the brush is pretty cool to
Once
do.
Once you learn to draw with your elbow instead of your wrist,
yeah,
that's the most important part. But I did this Richard Scarry title card, and I did it all in Micron because I didn't want to do a dip pen because it takes too long. But he basically did everything dip pen. And it killed my hand. Like about halfway into it, my hand was like falling. I was like curling up like I was an old crone. And I just, you know, it's like, oh, how did he do? Like, who draws with these things? They're like thick and they're just so, I don't know, they just felt like anti-drawing tools, so.
I hate dip pens, also known as nibs.
Yeah.
They're the metal ones that you dip in the ink and then basically they just scratch up your paper like crazy.
Because you always go the wrong direction with them and you get this nice Ralph Steadman.
Yeah.
And then you forget, because then also, like when you use a brush, you put down this nice line, and then pretty much as soon as you put it down, you can like rub your hand over it,
yeah.
And there's no problem. But with an ink line, then you go to move the paper, and then you put your hand down, and then you lift it up, and you've got the drawing that you just inked is on your hand, and then you stamped it across the paper when you're trying to draw, and you're like, what? Oh. Yeah, I'm not a pen guy. That's why I use the Microns, but I just found them so, they're just not designed for the human hand. I don't know.
No, they were all designed.
What I'm saying is, it's amazing that your hand is still working.
Yeah, you have a beautiful hand.
Well, do your finger exercises. You know, stretch those things out.
Oh, is that what you do?
It's also good to like it's good to rotate some balls in your hand. Have you ever seen those metal balls?
Oh, I love the theme for this.
Rotate in your hand just to stretch out those muscles.
Oh, I just do that when I'm piloting or when I'm a captain on a ship. Then I just have the balls and
then
so far back in time. Oh, that's a Key Mutiny reference. Well, that was from the 50s.
Wow.
You're welcome.
Okay.
You're welcome.
We have 2 minutes.
Yeah.
We have 2 minutes left for Dave to get all the way back to vaudeville bits. We have 2 minutes left, and then we're kicked out.
I got to pull out the seltzer water.
This means if someone does have one final question, you can get these tickets. And that, sir, is you. Yeah, you are. All right. What's your question, sir?
This is for Steve. I'm wondering, is there a difference in your drawing process when you're drawing for someone else's story and when you're drawing for writing?
Is there any difference in the process when you're drawing for someone else or yourself?
There is. It's much harder when it's for myself because there's so much more freedom. For one thing, so at least if I'm given a script, it's the tone is already set in a certain way. So I already know sort of which end of my drawing style spectrum I will go. So like if it's a ghost project, I know I'm going to lean more towards more detail things that you don't need certain details and creepiness for like the uniforms are right, but it's also a little sort of spooky. So I'm not going to go to my cartoony end of my spectrum. Whereas something more lighthearted like Miko Superstar, more clean, simple lines, I'll go towards that. If I'm left to my own devices, I don't know what the hell to do. So I'm actually playing with trying to flesh out my next solo project, and I'm just flailing around like crazy, trying to nail down the character designs and the style and all that. I think maybe I'm a bit too used to relying on the creators to set that tone for me, or the writers. It's a bit harder to make that switch to doing it all on my own and just get on with it and pick one.
You gotta work with that jerk again.
Yeah,
that jerk, that is you. Steve, that's the worst guy to work with. I found the same way. I don't like working with myself at all. I wish there was some way I could do my work that wasn't with me.
Yes.
I think I'm the biggest flaw that I've got. Unless I'm doing this show. In which case.
Oh, that reminds me, because I actually wore my shirt that my parents gave me when I was in grade 6.
Okay.
Today. There it is, everyone, in case you didn't believe
what
that
does
I...
It, what does it say, Dave, for those of you that can't read on the podcast?
What does it say? Philosophically, I quest perfection. Physically, I procrastinate. I think it's a great message to give your kid when he's in grade 6. Good luck on the road to life.
But here's the best part about this, and we're going to wrap this up with this, that Dave has his shirt, one that he kept from grade 6. Yeah. That is a real hoarder thing to do. Mm-hmm. And two, that it fits you.
Yes.
So you have the body of a 40-something-year-old man when you were in grade 6. Yes.
I was. No one will believe me, but I grew super fast, which was why I was inept in elementary school. And could like hardly, I was like a giraffe walking through the school. And then a
beautiful giraffe.
And then I had to wait like till high school, and then people kind of caught up to me, and I was like, oh, hey guys, now I can see you. This is great.
All right.
Before that time, I felt like the friendly giant. You know, I would like bring chairs for people and set them up, and you know, or I would just stand ho 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 over top of them.
Normally I'd let this conversation keep going, but we have a hard edit right now. We've got to wrap this up. Thank you so much to our guest, Steve Rawlson.
Thanks
for
having
me. It's been a delight. Thank you for VanCaf. It's been a fantastic convention. This is probably my favorite convention, like, in Vancouver, for sure.
Yeah, it's
and
great.
It's just fantastic. Thanks to everyone who made this all happen and let us do our nonsense here. Thank you to David, my friend who does this and puts up with my insults that I put up with his and his old-timey references. And thank you to you guys for showing up, especially those of you that came and saw us at our table and said you listened to the show. We super appreciate it. SneakyDragon.com is our website. Come visit us there and leave us messages. We'd like to hear from you. This has been us at VanCaf, and if you clap right now, it'll sound like you enjoyed yourself.
Talking about playing with balls. 45 minutes
of blow, yeah. Right?